We're back here at Relatos Zapatistas on 104.1 FM in the East Bay, also streaming live at berkeleyliberationradio.net. You can always send us an email at relatoszapatistas@gmail.com. Let us know some advice, tips, hints, critiques, comments, questions, whatever you want us to cover, we'll talk about it. And you can call in to the studio right now. At the phone number is 510-495-1666. Si quieres llamarnos, si tienes algún comentario, lo que tú quieras mencionar, puedes llamarnos aquí directamente en el estudio. El número es 510-495-1666. And we're going to be talking here, I think we're going to be talking about the U.S. Social Forum right now with two people who were there, are in the studio. One person who is there, and one other person who's going to be who was there is going to be calling into the studio at about 5 p.m. So yeah, we're going to be talking about the U.S. Social Forum, trying to figure out what was going on there. And remember, the way we're framing this program today is talking about sort of the trial, and this trial is the people versus the state, and we're thinking about the ways that politics can be organized and people can be organized and communities can be organized without sort of needing to go through the official politics or the política de arriba, the electoral politics, the institutional politics, the bureaucratic struggles.
And so the U.S. Social Forum, this is, I believe, the second time that this has taken place. The first was in the summer of 2007, and that was held in Atlanta. And this recent one, again, was in Detroit, Michigan, just a week ago or so. And the Social Forum has... the World Social Forum and the U.S. Social Forum have long been associated with the sort of form and process and experience of Zapatista-related encuentros. And so the form of the encuentro is sort of taken up in a different way here in the United States with the U.S. Social Forum in very interesting ways. And so we want to invite our good friend Ash here, our compañera, to talk to us a little bit about what it is that she saw and felt in the experience there. So maybe we could start off the interview here hearing just a little bit of your sort of initial impressions or just a general description of sort of what it was like. For those of us who have never been to a social forum, the mere thought of it just seems overwhelming. I mean, it was what, 10, 15, 20,000 people there? Just massive. So
when I was there, the last thing that I heard from the organizers in terms of numbers, they had around 15,000 registered and estimating about 2,000 who didn't register. But yes, overwhelming is actually a very good word to describe it. There's hundreds. There's an opening march, which brings so many people together. And that was phenomenal. There was, everyone's rocking their shirts. There's music. One of my favorite parts of the march was when we were stopped at one point, a circle, a dance circle breaks out and people just start dancing, having a good time. There's, brass bands, there's music. And then you get to Cobo Hall, which is a massive building, just huge. Everything in Detroit is big, which, based off of my understanding and how I, have seen it and is Henry Ford, pretty much founded Detroit, the auto industry. It's based, that the industrialization of Detroit is, the auto industry. And he, Henry Ford, just totally created Detroit and the suburbs of Detroit, racial segregation, created the first large scale assembly line and these huge buildings. Anyway, Cobo Hall, huge. you get there and then the following day the way that it's structured is there's many spaces that you can participate in. There's cultural spaces, there's a lot of art. You can go to the creativity lab and you can just create whatever you'd like. There's workshops in three different sections every day, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and then there's plenaries at night. So, and every plenary has a particular theme, Detroit centered. And then the second one was international, linking Detroit to the international community. And then the third one was alternatives and visions. So there's never a shortage of time or things to do. Something that I found that was really important, which speaks to the feeling of overwhelm that many people feel actually, is there's a healing and health space as well. There's healers, folks who are there to give free massage, Reiki, and make sure that people are able to participate in their best selves at such a big event. So, yeah.
So what I guess the next question is, what were you doing there? And how did you make the decision to make the trek out to Detroit? And sort of what were some priorities for you in terms of your participation in the social forum?
I went 2007 in Atlanta with a group of comrades, feeling the energy there and having a sense of this is big. You know, this feels like a big thing to be a part of something that I learned so much at that at the first social forum. So when I found out that it was going to be in Detroit and the Allied Media Conference is going to be in Detroit, I was, of course, you know, it's like a double, you know, buy one, get one free kind of a thing. It was really awesome. So I was really excited to go because I got to go in 2007. Also because being able to participate in the People's Movement Assemblies, was really inspired by the work that our friends are doing there. Another way of doing democracy, another way of doing politics, thinking, you know, beyond, well, let's stop talking about it, let's actually do it. And then actually something that when I was looking at all the workshops that caught my eye. So I knew that I would find something there that would speak to me. And so for me is a lot of the work around transformative practices that restorative justice, transformative justice. Oh, so we are we don't rely upon the state to heal ourselves, to educate ourselves, to learn together. These are people doing things together, and from a community grassroots level. So that I just kind of went with my intuition, honestly.
Can you talk a little bit about, you mentioned sort of trauma and dealing with trauma, coming together to deal with sort of the traumatic effects of capitalism and police brutality and stuff like that, that, you know, I think they resonate, those struggles kind of resonate a lot with what people in the community here in Oakland are thinking about in terms of Oscar Grant. Mm-hmm. And so this is sort of one of the overarching themes, ways that we're trying to think about structure of this program today. So can you talk a little bit about like what the sessions or workshops were like that you participated in there, and sort of how they might be useful for thinking our local struggles here?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So the way that the workshop that I went to, which was called Politicizing Trauma, Generative Somatics and Generation 5 began combined that workshop, and the way that they begin it is, we are all steeped in trauma. Living in this society is traumatic. One thing that I just came to my attention recently was relating the, well, I can go back to that. But we live, whether you're privilege and oppression, and in whatever way that we live in this society, whether on an individual level, community level, or societal level, we're all, and historical trauma, we're all impacted by trauma. And by this impact, literally our bodies are impacted by violence that we experience, whether or not we know how that has impacted us. That's one of the things that somatics, which was transformation and somatics, was addressed in Politicizing Trauma workshop. And soma literally means the living organism in its fullness. So how do we understand and be ourselves in our full selves? And so somatics is having an awareness of self and acknowledging that one response to the trauma that we've experienced living in this society is to literally numb out, that we have numbed ourselves. It is a coping mechanism. And how can we learn to heal ourselves from that trauma?
Can you just give a couple like really concrete examples of this trauma? I mean, I think we could come up with some, but like, you know, I feel like there's a way that we can talk about trauma and it sort of feels like very abstract and remote, but like, you know, if we're all being affected by trauma, the trauma of living in capitalism, living under capitalism, what is that? What are these sort of effects that they, how do they reshape, how does it reshape our bodies, literally?
Right. Well, one thing that I learned was, for example, in Marxist terms, the idea of alienation, that our minds are not, and our bodies are separate because our minds are not able to put to use our dreams. We cannot make them. You know what I'm saying? So the separation between our minds and what we are able to do. So we can think about, there's people who are thinking about the products, for example, that are going to be created, but the workers are not the ones who get to dream up that product or dream up that creation. So we are literally alienated from our work. So the dreamers are separate from the doers. The doers are separate from the thinkers. So that's traumatic when you are constantly day in, day out living a life in which you are not able to live out and do what you are dreaming of doing. So alienation, in Marx's terms, disassociation in terms of trauma. So we literally are your mind is no longer within your body. So somatics is a way of aligning your mind and your body and your spirit together. So how can we live in our fullest selves? And then you have, you know, everything. You have, you know, police brutality, you have domestic violence, you have, you know, and being a witness of those things, and as well as being, you know, literally as hearing about them is also traumatic. I mean, that was something that was new to me, was, wow. So when I hear on the news something that's awful and I am impacted by it, I'm not, that's not a weird thing. You know, everyone is impacted by hearing these awful things.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just to go back for a moment to what you were commenting on in terms of work, right, and the place that has in our experiences of living in capitalism and in a very extreme form of capitalism here in the United States, you know, thinking about the 4th of July, this day of celebrating the United States and America and all these things, and, you know, one of the things that I hear often when I'm traveling outside the United States from fellow gringos is the celebration of, you know, the work ethic of the United States, and we work harder than any other country. But the disconnect in terms of understanding what our work is for and what it produces and what it actually generates and the effects that it has and the consequences of it and the ways that we're doing it are just completely void from the kind of consciousness that people have about their work in this country, I feel like, in particular, just speak a little bit in generalizations, you know, but so I think that thinking through even the impact of this, you know, we often talk about the trauma of capitalism on los de abajo, on those from below, you know, the people in the grassroots, the, you know, the communities in Chiapas, the communities, you know, most sort of violated by capitalism. But it's also important, I think, to think about the ways that it is affecting, you know, these so-called workaholics in the United States as well, and, you know, folks that are directly, materially benefiting from this entire system, but that are also, you know, experiencing this sort of low-level, sort of, you know, but deep-reaching trauma as a result of this.
And it's interesting, too. I mean, this might be a way of sort of reframing the concept. We always talk about in the show about low-intensity warfare. You know, low-intensity war going on in Chiapas is when the army is there sort of surveying people and sort of threatening people and intimidating people, and the paramilitaries are there and they encroach on land. And, you know, it's always like Alita just said, it's always happening to los de abajo, the people, sort of the subaltern people, the people who are being oppressed. And it's always somewhere else. That's the other thing. It's always somewhere else. And so, you know, if we talk about trauma might be a really useful framework for talking about the way that for talking about low intensity war, but on an everyday basis, that doesn't have to do with sort of the use of arms or the use of intentional threat. Just like sort of the everyday existence is traumatic.
Maybe thinking about this connection, you know, between the spaces where we see most sort of clearly the effects of this, you know, really corrupt system. What connections are being made? You mentioned that one of the plenaries was about the international connections being made from the social forum. And so I'm curious if you could elaborate a little bit more on sort of what that plenary looked like, how it sort of played out, and the ways that people were connecting sort of across national borders, you know, given the sort of necessity of a U.S. Social forum in addition to the already existing world social forum. But what's happening there? What's the connection being made?
Mm-hmm. Let's see. So because there was so much going on, I was trying to take in a lot. But one of the things that sticks out for me from that plenary, I believe that was Thursday night, was there was a representative from Iraq and Afghanistan, Veterans Against the War. And her story, being able to connect the... there's folks who also were talking about Palestine, who are also talking about Iraq. I think that there was such an emphasis throughout the whole social forum of connecting everybody's stories, of understanding that we are not alone, that our struggles are interrelated, are connected, and that the necessity of not giving the priority to those things that are separating us, and the real intense intention of making sure that those connections were made. So I mean, though you name a struggle, and I feel like, and it was very much represented and connected with our local struggles.
something that comes up often in sort of tense terms around this question of sort of the representation of various struggles, and particularly in a space, you know, that takes place in one location, you know, Detroit. Not everybody can get there. Maybe, you know, there's strange things that happen in terms of the selection of who goes from what place and things like that. So I'm wondering sort of if there was or how the sort of NGO grassroots tension played out, right? We hear so much about the sort of NGOization of struggle and the sort of NGOization of things thought of as grassroots, but sort of the way that that becomes sort of absorbed into this sort of NGO industrial complex. And so I can only imagine that, you know, a 15 to 20,000 person gathering would not be, you know, free of NGOs. And I also don't want to demonize all NGOs. But, you know, sort of how that played out and in what ways the sort of institutionalization of struggle was a present topic or concern among the participants.
Mm-hmm. That definitely came up in a couple spaces that I was at. And it wasn't as concretely addressed, I feel like, as in 2007. In 2007, Insight Women of Color Against Violence hosted two very large, overcrowded workshops on the nonprofit industrial complex, and they were something that people were grappling with, and it was very, you know, present. This time, I feel like it was mentioned as a contradiction, folks seeing it as, yeah. Taking money from NGOs, being a part of the nonprofit industrial complex is shitty, and it is, it does dictate a lot of our struggle. But it also gets people here. You know, it has also played a main part in making sure that we can get here together and we can share our stories and share our struggles. So yeah, that was definitely a tension and a contradiction, but people embraced it.
I mean, it's interesting too, right now, thinking about what's going on in Oakland, there's a lot of NGOs are sort of going out of their way and sort of to call for calm and nonviolent protest when the verdict is announced. And they're standing with, they're sort of collaborating with and standing with, sometimes quite literally collaborating with and standing next to government officials who are sort of calling for the same sorts of things. And so I think a lot of people here have been wondering about, you know, what it means to be, you know, we usually talk about politics from below, la política desde abajo, as being free from the influence of official politics, like free from the sort of electoral politics dominating the way that decisions are made and the sort of the concerns that people have. But how much do the sort of economic relationships or the even just like the social relationships between NGOs and the state or state institutions, how much are those connected? It's just something that I personally have been wondering about. And one way that we see that, I mean, I just think going back to what Alita mentioned earlier about the media stuff in Oaxaca, the Ulises Ruiz, who's the governor of Oaxaca, has been accused of sort of dealing with, trying to sort of meddle with what the media was reporting about other candidates who are running, the person he's supporting to run for governor. And so, you know, you see a very clear relationship there between the media, which isn't really an NGO, but it's an institution that has these connections with the state. And so I don't know. I mean, when you went to the Allied Media Conference too, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about what you saw there, the way that people were talking about alternative media versus sort of institutionalized media, maybe even like the relationship between the institutionalized media and the state, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. What comes to mind is media is communication, essentially. And my vibe from the Allied Media Conference is everybody's story matters. Media should be for everybody. It should be free. We should be able to communicate with each other. And that's it. You know, it's a human right. We have the ability to communicate with each other. That's how we know who we are. That's how we know how to connect with each other. So there was every opportunity. I mean, I was really impressed. There's so many opportunities made for folks to be able to learn how to communicate with each other, whether it be building your own radio transmitter, learning how to build a blog, learning how to do mud stencils, like cutting out stencils and making them with mud, you know, and putting your message out there. As well as learning the local history of graffiti art in Detroit, I mean, which is another form of communication, another form of media. So I think that what's going on there is definitely supporting people to be able to tell their story and definitely outside of any kind of control that there should be. You know, it's open and free for everybody. And that was really powerful.
So did you participate in any particular workshops there, or did you learn how to build a transmitter or something like that? I mean, we could really use that, some of that knowledge here.
You know what? I didn't Prometheus Radio was really present, and they were doing a lot of that. I totally went for the, I stuck with the like healing, transformation kind of workshops. My form of media that I participated in, one of them was embodying resistance through dance. And that was really, it felt, you know, it was great. And we actually, media also communicate and dance, another form of communication. So we were doing that, and that was really great. And I mean, being very creative in both the Allied Media Conference and the U.S. Social Forum, creativity was just, was abundant. I wrote down a quote from Grace Lee Boggs, where she said, creativity is the key to unlock human liberation. And I feel like all those spaces were just all about that, you know? And one workshop, we were talking about reframing community accountability and what does that look like. And we literally did an installation piece with chairs. Like, some people did a collage, some people did made up a poem, and we totally transformed the room and used chairs as a way to show, you know, straight lines of chairs where you're looking at one script and this is how we know how to be, and then transformed into a circle, an interrelated circle of chairs. And it was just, it totally unlocks your mind, you know, when you're thinking in a different way, being able to communicate with each other. And then how did that process of creation go between us, you know, as people who are trying to create something together? So just really thinking outside of the box and really trying to put yourself out there and take risks, which is really phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially what you're bringing up about the importance of thinking about the ways that our bodies interact with the sort of objects around us and the technology around us, you know, thinking of chairs and sort of meeting spaces as a kind of technology that's very that really has a huge effect on how we interact with each other, you know, in those sort of meeting spaces, you know, whether it's an encuentro in a Caracol in Chiapas or the U.S. Social Forum at the Cobo, you know, Center or whatever, like, those are spaces that, you know, spending hours and hours and hours in those kinds of contexts, you know, it has a big effect on it. So to sort of play with that and sort of not only play with that, but also think critically about how to transform our interactions between people, and really recognizing the significance of the face-to-face interactions, you know, which is something I always try and sort of come back to, particularly in a space like the Allied Media Conference, which, you know, so much of the sort of incredible independent and alternative and grassroots media that's being produced these days is very reliant on you know, sort of high technology, right? And in what ways that has actually created a lot of sort of massive gulfs between people meeting face to face. You know, I mean, it's amazing to be able to collaborate digitally with somebody across the globe, but there's also the importance of, even for folks, you know, doing so much sort of digital media stuff to see each other, right, and to interact face to face. So that's an exciting thing to hear about, you know, that media was thought of very broadly and very openly in that space. So that's really exciting for us here as well. And, you know, seeing that the studio can be a space for this kind of interaction as well. You know, here in the Berkeley Liberation Radio studio today, we have Ashley, who we were just talking to, and we also have a new friend, Pato, who just walked in to talk about our recent actions in San Francisco. So is there anything, any last comments you'd like to make? I know we're going to hear from James about the People's Movement Assemblies, and I know you'll be able to participate in that, but any last thoughts on the social forum?
I just want to thank you for having me and being, you know, honoring the U.S. Social Forum process. And I look forward to 2013.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. And we'll be coming back with Ashley and some other folks here in just a minute after a musical break.
All renegades and boys, the acronyms, so fuck rallies. I'm in the park doing reps, you in ballys. And no, I'm not referring to slick Rick shoes. P is a walking time bomb like tick, 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 tick. When gloomy economic statistics loom, civilized people become terrorists on stolen land that's not even America's in the first place. That's why the energy's all fucked up. I throw stones like Palestinian drama. It's bigger than Hillary, it's bigger than Obama, it's bigger than McCain, it's bigger than the Pope. This unity is faith, this change is hope.
Folks. thoughts, my focus like David Patterson. In the ghetto where it's impossible to escape, and the first obstacle is the tapeworm in my abdomen. Spear chopper, fuck that. I chose javelins and $5,000 bills in the face of James Madison. This is an American postmortem. To focus on your bogus, Novus Sodus Chlorum.
Back on Relatos Zapatistas on Berkeley Liberation Radio 104.1, www.berkeleyliberationradio.net, and we're going to continue our discussion now of the U.S. Social Forum and some of the activities that took place there. So I believe we have on the line here our compañero James from Atlanta. James, are you there?
Yes. Yeah. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. We're so happy to have you live on the air here with us. How's everything going in the South?
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. We had actually a really nice day today, and we're pretty excited about things that took place in Detroit, and so we look forward to sharing that with you guys today.
That sounds great. Well, can you talk to us just a little bit to start out? We've been talking with Ash here in the studio about the U.S. Social Forum sort of in general, and we're going to talk to you specifically. We wanted to talk about the PMAs, or the People's Movement Assemblies. And so could you just explain sort of what the PMAs are for our listeners, and sort of maybe a little bit about the emergence of the PMAs as well, so that everybody sort of we're all on the same page?
Okay, yeah, no problem. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you great.
Okay, great. Well, basically, in short, the People's Movement Assembly was essentially kind of organized around five basic kind of themes: to gather, to share, to connect, to commit, and to act. So once again, it's basically folks in their local communities or within particular issues gathering with the intention to share those struggles with others, to connect those struggles with other struggles in communities abroad, to come to some kind of shared commitment with the purpose of acting collectively. And so ultimately, the People's Movement Assemblies are just a strategy, a movement strategy, to bring folks together to develop to kind of cultivate shared visions, shared strategies, and shared actions to push those visions and dreams forward, in short. There's of course, a deeper history there, which we can talk about maybe a little bit later. But in general, in short, the first kind of, in quotes, official People's Movement Assembly was held at the end of the first U.S. Social Forum that was actually held here in Atlanta. And it was held on the last day. 500 people showed up to that. And it was kind of an experiment in the assembly process. Dozens of communities came together to essentially proclaim their statements, their demands. And so it was a struggle, but we made it through that process and we learned a lot. And out of that, folks were convinced that if with a little more focus and kind of attention to facilitation and the politics of listening, that that the assembly process, the PMA process, could be used to support communities to organize between forums, but also to kind of to organize in local communities around particular issues with an intent to connect those up at a national level, i.e. through the U.S. Social Forum. And so this, what occurred in Detroit, represented, in short, kind of in the short term, the culmination of 3 years of organizing. In the long term, many folks have kind of asserted that this process represented the culmination of 10 years, kind of beginning with the battle in Seattle, which kind of, in a lot of ways, represented the kind of a tactical kind of expression of a resistance to neoliberalism that was, for a number of folks, kind of unsustainable. But now the assembly process kind of represents a more kind of long-term strategic kind of formation of communities connecting up with each other to form deeper communities of resistance and creativity. So we can talk more about that history.
Well, one of the things that you just mentioned that is pretty interesting to us is you were talking about the facilitation of these assemblies. And so I wonder, like, what if you could tell us a little bit about how the PMA spaces were facilitated and sort of what they looked like for all of us who, you know, weren't there.
Yeah, well, over 100 people's movement assemblies occurred over the past year. 45 occurred before the forum and all across the country, and over 52 plus, 52 and 55 occurred at the forum during a three-day period. Each one of those spaces were highly unique, and so in there, since they represented their own kind of social fingerprint, so it's kind of hard to generalize across those spaces, but one of the things that we know for sure is that the majority, if not all of them, use a popular education kind of framework for orientation, meaning that folks use a number of facilitated activities to get that gathering of people together to kind of to draw out the commonalities, to draw out a shared vision, and to articulate kind of a shared set of commitments and actions. And so one of the things that we know for sure is that facilitators in these spaces were using popular education. But that's pretty much that's the extent of what we know. Once again, the assemblies were highly varied across the board. There were all kinds of formats. And actually, one of the things we're working to do right now is we've been documenting this process, and we're hoping to learn a lot from that because things were so varied, and hoping to post that online at our site, PMA20.org. I'm sorry, PMA2010.org, which will outline the agenda, the facilitation strategies, and will provide us with a general kind of profile, a brief description of each of those assemblies, and hopefully future ones that are formed.
So what was it like? So, I mean, so obviously you've been organizing locally, regionally, I guess, regionally, in the South, around Atlanta. And so then to come into a space that's sort of like bringing all those regions into the sort of the whole country, right, a countrywide network, which is what you were talking about before, what kinds of conflicts came up in those spaces? What were the complications of sort of coming together around between these different regions?
Well, a couple of things. One, it wasn't so much just regions, although there were regional kind of issues and concerns that were definitely predominant throughout the space. But, you know, you also had, you know, folks, for example, there was things that, a number of kind of trans-local issues. So you had the migrant community enforced there. Of course, you know, Arizona and New Mexico and South Texas were there in mass, but you also had the Caribbean migrant community there in solidarity, or not just in solidarity, but also, I mean, that there's folks where they're talking about their and sharing their struggles with their company, with the struggles that are occurring there down in Arizona and along the border. So in that sense, I just wanted to just note that it wasn't purely geographical in terms of regions, but also kind of around issues and kind of a combination of community struggles, and ultimately, I think, and just to directly answer your question, I think the biggest kind of struggle or tension was around kind of everyone trying to figure out how do we connect our struggles up with each other without diluting or losing the focus of our particular struggles. I mean, everyone has kind of came excited about this process, and you know, at least the people that I talk to, you know, were like, you know, about time. This is about time that we, you know, because food justice and food sovereignty is intimately connected to prison abolition, and prison abolition is connected to the anti-war movement. And you can't understand the anti-war movement outside of the Israeli apartheid. And if we're going to talk about Israeli apartheid, we have to talk about the apartheid that's forming in Arizona, and or that's articulating itself in Arizona. And so, you know, a lot of folks came together excited about trying to connect up those struggles, to sharing and connecting struggles, but trying to figure out how we go about doing that, I think was the biggest challenge. And we're still learning now. I mean, this is fairly new to us here in the States. I think, you know, folks in the global South have been kind of struggling through and experimenting with processes with connecting struggles and sharing struggles. I think the Zapatistas have been really brilliant at experimenting with that process and giving us, you know, kind of an idea of how that could be possible. But I think that was the I don't know if I would say tension, but the challenge was around how do we go about doing that, and how do we listen to each other. So in a lot of ways it all comes down to facilitation on some level, like how do we, that's my take on it. I think maybe other organizers might have a different perspective on it.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a really interesting point with the question of facilitation, you know, which sometimes gets sort of left aside as a logistical concern, you know, and not really taken seriously as something substantive, something that can really affect both the sort of quality and content of our interactions. But I think that taking very seriously the kinds of spaces and the kinds of efforts that we make to connect and really genuinely try and create the sort of circumstances to genuinely dialogue and dialogue in a way that can sort of carry on and have real impact in terms of, you know, what you brought up with the sort of objective of the PMAs is about gathering, to share, to connect, to commit, to act together, right? You know, I think that there's something really beautiful about that sort of constellation of sort of practices there. I'm also really interested in what you bring up about, you know, this question of how to connect with and across and through the Global South. You know, there's been a lot of talk recently sort of thinking about parts of the U.S. South as, you know, sort of as making up part of the Global South, you know, connections that we can see through the borderlands and through, you know, the Southeast with the Global South. And so I'm curious if you could maybe elaborate a little bit more on how you see specifically the struggles that y'all are organizing around in Atlanta and around the Southern regional PMAs and just sort of what's happening specifically in that context that was sort of presented and expanded on at the National Convergence.
Well, I mean, as you guys know, I'm in deep community with Project South, the Institute for the Elimination of Genocide and Poverty, based here in Atlanta, who's been, they were the anchor organization for the U.S. Social Forum, for the first one that popped off here in Atlanta. You know, one of the things it's been a kind of a, you know, an honor to work with them, because one of the things that they take very seriously is our Southern struggles, Southern histories of struggle, both in the Southeast, but also the Global South. I think a good example of this kind of political and historic connection is if we look at kind of the history of apartheid, you know, we on our caravan, one of the things that we talked about on our way up to Detroit. Because there's this historical kind of connection between the Deep South and Detroit, because a lot of black folks in particular migrated up to Detroit in search for jobs, and kind of you know, and leaving the South, leaving the brutality of the racial dictatorship that was here, particularly during the you know, the 30s and the 40s, when industry was kind of, or in the 50s too, as the industry was building in Detroit. And so, but one of the things that, and now you have, actually you have a number of black folks out of Detroit, and just communities that are migrating back down South. So there's this kind of interesting kind of flow exchange between folks. But one of the things we talked about was, historically, if we look at, you know, the Deep South, and the formation of the racial dictatorship here in the Deep South, like a lot of the laws, for example, the vagrancy laws, which were passed in the 1860s after after the Civil War, required black folks to carry documentation for their work to prove employment. And if they couldn't prove it, they were arrested, and then they were disappeared into work camps. A real brilliant book that just came out, it's called Slavery by Another Name by Douglas Blackman, I think it came out in 2006. And one of the things he notes is that hundreds of thousands of blacks were disappeared throughout the South up through World War II. And they played a key part in managing in these work camps that were, you know, in a lot of cases were coal mines, brickyards, lumber yards. But I think one of the things that we noticed when we were talking about this, how these laws, how this played a role in kind of informing the South African model, and then now with Arizona kind of popping off, we see once again kind of the you know, the reformulation of this you know, this apartheid system. And so I know that right now one of the things that we've been trying to figure out is how do we build deeper alliances with between black and brown communities here in the Deep South. How do we further connect those struggles up with folks along the Gulf Coast? And then how do we do that in a way that's transformative, that is allowing for us to create the kind of worlds that we know are possible today, through our relationships, through the spaces that we convene, and through the dignities that we kind of assert. And so, and one of those ways has been for us the assembly, as a way to bring folks together, and to actively kind of begin to self-govern in our communities. And I think, you know, for us, self-governance just makes so much sense in the context of abandonment, you know, whether it's Atlanta, Detroit, Harlem, or, you know, or Oakland. So, but anyway, I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I know that that's kind of where we're, where I can be more specific.
Yeah, no, I think that was really helpful for kind of understanding how y'all are sort of making sense of the process that you're participating in. As you know, we have your friend and our friend Ashley here in the studio with us too. So I'm going to pass the mic over to her and open up some conversation between the two of you that were both at the Social Forum.
So I just wanted to add to what James just ended on in terms of, and also add to the conversation with facilitation. I was able to help in the documentation process of a few PMAs, and one that really did embody the change that we wanted to see and was creating the world in which we wanted to live in within that space was the Health and Healing for Transformation People's Movement Assembly, where the knowledge of the collective, of the group, was entirely honored. The strategies of resilience and healing was honored. There was a collective timeline that was produced in that space that looked at repression within the context of health and healing as well as resistance. And so, and it also, the space was held through grounding exercises as well as through somatic practices, and it was a beautiful space where everyone was honored, and there was ritual involved. And so I just wanted to add that in the PMA that I was able to participate in, one of them, facilitation was taken seriously, and it was the space that we wanted to live in. So
James, I don't know if you have any last comments you'd like to make. We're going to wrap up this segment here so we can go on with our conversation about Atenco, but comments, observations, questions?
No, I mean, I think we covered. I mean, this is, you know, one of the things that we're excited about is that this kind of represents the beginning. And so, in an experimentation, something that we're hoping to learn with folks as we move forward. Ultimately, it's about acting, bringing, drawing out shared analysis, shared strategy, shared vision, and pushing forward shared actions that allow us to you know, call forth the world that we, you know, that we all know is possible and is necessary. And so, I mean, this is it's exciting because it's new. We haven't really done this here in the U.S., but folks have been doing this in the Global South for quite some time. And I think if the success, the vitality of this space is, you know, largely, I think, in my opinion, it's, you know, largely depending on our ability to attend to and take very seriously that history struggle that has been, you know, so brilliantly laid out kind of before us by movements like the Zapatistas, what folks have been doing in Brazil and in other places in Africa. Anyway, thanks for the opportunity. And if folks have any questions or want to check out the process, they can go to pma2010.org. We're working through that site, but there's a listing of the resolutions, the assemblies that were held. We're still uploading a lot of that, so we got a lot to get up. But if you check out that site, that should give you a good sense of what is taking place.
Excellent. Thank you so much again, James. Again, it sounds like it's pma2010.org is the website to check out. And we're just so glad to have had you on the air today and hope to continue the dialogue here from Relato Zapatistas to Project South. So thank you, James.
Definitely. Thank you for the time.